Welcome to another edition of Let's Find Out. This is Art Athens, and I want to caution you now, there is nothing wrong with your radio. Listen carefully.
It's 12 noon. WCBS, AM and FM, New York. Wendy Warren and the News, brought to you by Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. And now, speaking for Maxwell House, here is Wendy Warren.
Hello, folks. This is Wendy Warren with news reports from the women's world. But first, here's Douglas Edwards with the latest headlines.
Well, the shooting has stopped in Korea after 37 months of death and destruction. The official ceasefire came in...
We can pick this up live. Here is Douglas Edwards.
Where did you get that, Art?
I must say, they are rare as hound's teeth.
That really goes back. That goes back to about 1947, 48, somewhere in there.
Wendy Warren in the news. Of course, not your beginnings with CBS, and certainly not your beginnings with broadcasting, but as we look at your closing week, really, coming up as a broadcaster here at CBS, we're going to go back through this next half hour and talk about some of the countless incredible things that you've done in your career over the
years. Sounds like fun, if not revealing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Wendy Warren.
Sure.
Because that was really a soap opera.
That was a soap opera brought on in the late 40s to replace a very popular program called Kate Smith Speaks. She had a 15-minute show at 12 noon every day. Assisting her was her most able manager, Ted Collins, and they had been on for years, I think about 10 years. And as I say, it was a very popular show. So along comes Wendy Warren as a replacement, sort of a hybrid, really, of sorts, because it was contain 2 minutes of CBS News, purist Ray Serene, and then a one-minute look onto the distaff side of things, into the women's world, reported by Wendy Warren.
Which was real news?
Was real news. Yeah. And after which, there would be a click, and the organ would come in, and you'd hear Wendy or the announcer say, well, we're off the air, and then she'd have a little conversation with the announcer, Bill Flood, whose name was really Hugh James, and then more organ, more transition, and in away we would go into the life of Wendy Warren, girl reporter, wife of big city publisher. It became a fantastically popular show. Nobody thought it would last more than 13 weeks. Indeed, it lasted about 13 years.
It's a great format, though, but one wonders, could you do that today? Could you get a Douglas Edwards to be part of a drama or a soap opera?
I think so, because really I didn't take part in the soap other than to, I suppose, legitimize Wendy Warren, who actually was a very fine actress whose name was Florence Freeman, married to a rabbi. I think they lived over in Jersey City or somewhere over there in Jersey, and had two lovely daughters. And Florence was a very, very intelligent young woman and did the news very well, her part of it. Mm-hmm. Mine was, as I said at the beginning, purist CBS Ray Serene, and so I just said, Wendy, what's going on in your division? And then I would leave, and then away they would go into the, after her one-minute report, into her play life.
Might somebody today raise the question about mixing of news and entertainment, even though you weren't part of it, and say, well, you know, where is our integrity here? This is supposed to be serious business.
They might today. I don't know. I didn't find, they were pretty rigid even in those days. I was doing, now that cut that you had was obviously in the early 50s, had mm-hmm. to do with the ending of the Korean War, and we were doing television at the same time, and this was the radio outlet that I kept when I went into television full time, for several reasons. One, as you know, 12 noon is an excellent time for a news broadcast, mm-hmm. and it sort of fit my schedule rather well to do the radio at noon, and then the evening 15 minutes report, as it was at that time, at 6:45 on television.
You joined CBS in 1942, and we have just a little cut. Doug, they tell me that you don't have any tape of yourself.
Not very much. I really, Art, to tell you the truth, I have piles of tape, but I just never have sorted it all out.
All without labels, probably,
all
like
with,
mine.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the trouble with it, and I just have not had time, particularly in these 2 or 3 weeks since I announced retirement. I have gotten an awful lot of requests for both audio and video tape, and other people have searched it out, as have you, apparently. Here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we dug out a piece of tape here, which is really the closing of the Douglas Edwards and the News, which was your television newscast.
Signature, yes.
Okay, and I just want to hear this because it introduces another element. We're getting very complicated here for a cheap show, but let's try this.
Douglas Edwards reporting coast to coast. Good night and happy weekend, everybody. Douglas Edwards with the news was brought to you by Parliament, the only leading high-filtration cigarette that has no filter feedback because the filter's recessed. Parliament.
How about that?
How about that?
I had forgotten that that existed. You know, Mike Wallace and I go way, way back together. And I had no idea in 1940, as we labored in the vineyard of WXYZ, the Michigan Radio Network. And you have something on that, Art?
Yes, indeed, because we knew that this was not... I feel like Ralph Edwards here.
This is your life?
Yes.
Okay.
We knew that this was not the first time that you and Mike had worked together, and so we went to talk to Mike about it.
WXYZ, Detroit, 1939-40.
That's right.
And he just stayed around for a little while there, because then he was back off to WSB in Atlanta, which covered Dixie like the dew, before he came here to CBS News. And the two of us were what were called Cunningham News Aces. Cunningham drugstores in Detroit sponsored the newscasts on WXYZ radio. And a P-38 would go on the Cunningham News Ace was on the air, and it was either Doug or myself. And those were the days when we ripped from the wire machine and read it on the air and brought the news to the people of the city of Detroit.
Now, has Doug changed any since then?
The astonishing thing is that Doug has not changed very much since, and that's 45 years ago. His voice is just as mellifluous, his attitude, his imperturbability, the accuracy of what he did, the assuring quality of what he does is with him today. As I've said, I can't understand why he's retiring.
Bless your heart, Mike. Thanks so much. You know, I just have to say a little bit about Mike Wallace here, because I'll never forget the first time I heard him standing in Studio E, I think it was, at WXYZ, which, among other things, in addition to producing pretty good news, it poured out the Lone Ranger and the Green Hornet and the Challenge of the Yukon. It originated from there and was on Mutual and was on the Canadian Broadcasting Company, and it went all over the country, of course. But the first time I ever heard Mike, who was fresh out of the University of Michigan, I think he'd had one radio job in Grand Rapids or Kalamazoo or somewhere. He was out of Brookline, Massachusetts. I listened to him read the news broadcast, and I said to myself, there is a comer if there ever was one. If there ever is one, this man is on his way. He's going to be great. He already is, but I think he's in for true greatness, and that was a little prescience I didn't know I had, but it followed through just about that way, so far as Mike Wallace was concerned. Got a little detoured there, I suppose, doing the commercials for a while, and extricated himself from that particular part of our business, I think, rather smoothly.
I was going to ask you how that came about. It is generally considered policy around here at CBS these days that newscasters, news broadcasters, don't do commercials, but sports broadcasters can. And I don't know why the division, but at that time, were sponsors requesting particular newscasters, or did Mike just become a...
Sponsors have always requested us, Art, because of the believability that if you are a good news broadcaster and people tune you in, it's a pretty sure shot that most of they tune you in because they believe you, and that's the most precious quality I think we can have. What happened with Mike was, when he got ready to come to CBS, he went in and talked to the then president of CBS News, whose name was Richard Salant, and said, I want to join the CBS News staff. I think I have the qualities for it. I can't reconstruct, as I assume this is what he said. But he offered to buy up whatever commercials that he had made and were then being used by whatever company or companies for whom he had made them. And that indeed is what he did. He bought up the commercials so they would no longer be on the air, so there would not be this conflict of interest with CBS News. Quite admirable. I don't know how many people would have done that.
That's a great story.
Yes.
On Mike. Now, I asked Mike a question.
One more thing. Reed Collins said he cannot think of a story to tell on Doug Edwards because Doug Edwards never did anything wrong.
I think that's probably true. I can think of a couple of stories to tell about Doug Edwards, but I'm not sure that it's a good idea to tell them. He's... I mean, this was 45 years ago. Those were salad days in Detroit, and we were somewhat more carefree then.
No one has...
Is that the end of the story, I hope?
That's the end of the story. That's where we stopped.
Again, thank you, Mr. Wallace.
I pressured him, you know, but he wouldn't bend.
Well, that's great. I'm not sure to what he refers, but we were more carefree. We were younger, and I suppose he has a couple of things rattling around in skeletons in my closet, but thanks a lot for putting them aside.
Let's talk about the carefree, younger Douglas Edwards, who got into the news business really when he was 15 years old, and I'm sure at that time you did not plan to become a legend. But as, starting there, what was on your mind then, and as you look back on it, what do you think about these marvelous years?
Well, I begin at the end here and say they have indeed been marvelous. Your adjective and descriptive absolutely bang on as usual, Art. At age 15, my real interest in news was that which I read in the newspapers and in Time magazine, the Literary Digest, I think, and heard maybe once a night on CBS in the early 30s from delivered by that great broadcaster Lowell Thomas. I was a junior announcer at WHET in Troy, Alabama. My appetite for radio having been developed 3-4 years previous to that out in a place called Silver City, New Mexico, where I would visit next door with a friend who had a little crystal set, and we would listen to faraway places flung with great clarity through that cool mountain air. And I really got a hang-up on radio, and I was always interested in news and what was going on around me. My first real news opportunity didn't come until I went to WSB in Atlanta and worked there as an announcer for a few months, and then they promoted me because they liked the way I did news, subbing for Atlanta Journal editors. They promoted me to the Atlanta Journal radio news staff and gave me a built-in, on-the-spot, on-the-paper journalism education, really, at the knee of the radio editor, who taught me the topography of the paper. I put together the Sunday page and ultimately wrote the column when he was away and did 3 news broadcasts a day from the Journal building. And that's how it began. To get ahead of the story, I heard the great World News Roundup on the night of March 13th with Bob Trout and Ed Murrow and William L. Shirer, and said, on that night in 1938 that CBS was where I wanted to go. But that is, I imagine I get ahead of things, so I'll shut up.
No, no, don't shut up. This is actually, you're the story here. These are just some tapes sure. that I brought to tickle one's imagination.
Well, as you know, Art, we've been celebrating the 50th anniversary of the World News Roundup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 4 years after I heard it, I had meantime prepared myself as best I could. I had gone off to Detroit to get some experience in the North Woods, in the North World, and to sharpen my southern consonants a bit, and to see how they did it up there. And I went back to WSB to fine hone whatever writing I could do. I tried to write at least a portion of each news broadcast I did, and as I said, I did three a day. So I did that for 2 years and then knocked on the CBS door and was hired to replace a man better known as the urbane host of What's My Line, but he was a fine newsman in his very own right. I refer to John Charles Daly.
Yes.
He was doing a program in the evening called The World Today. The World News Roundup, by then, was a regular feature in the morning at 8, but so was the World Today, which was the evening edition of the World News Roundup, really. Nobody's ever called it that, but that's what it was, from 6:45 to 7 each evening. And I was hired. I think it's kind of interesting. It was the roundup that pricked my interest in this network in the first place.
That's the and one you listened to when you were
evening,
15.
That's right, the evening edition of it that I went to work on when I came to New York, as well as doing another program that Charles Daly was doing. We called him Charlie Daly. John Daly was doing, called Report to the Nation, which was on Sunday nights, and it was a 30-minute report with full orchestra and actors to act out wartime stories. We didn't allow any recordings whatsoever during those days. Interesting thing, whenever we had Franklin Delano Roosevelt figured in the news of the week, as he so often did, particularly during World War II, we had an actor be FDR. Guess who the actor was? Art Carney.
You're kidding.
Nope, and he was a perfectly marvelous FDR.
Are you people making note of these things? That's
this is all going to appear in my book. I'm giving you a hunk of it right now, Art.
Well, I'll certainly have to get a copy of that.
But you got one.
Doug, why didn't they allow recordings, and why did they use actors?
I suppose the philosophy must have been, we are the Columbia Broadcasting System. We were not known really, except in abbreviation once in a while, as CBS. We were the Columbia Broadcasting System. I think the system cue is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System, in those wartime days. I suppose the thought was that we were expected to deliver things not canned, but entirely live. So many of the, I think they're probably in this country, were only about 500 radio stations, tops, in those days. And many of them played phonograph records or electrical transcriptions. And I guess it was thought that anything that emanated from the great city of New York or Chicago or San Francisco or Los Angeles or wherever, on the network or networks, should indeed be live. Now, we had the Columbia recordings in place, but even during the war, somehow or other, we did not record very much. And when since, we've been called on to do reports for cassettes and one thing and another, for an audio history of World War II, guess where we had to go to get recordings of what the CBS News Division put out during the war? To KIRO, a longtime and great affiliate in Seattle, whose manager was himself a news buff, and who decreed that everything that the CBS network put on the air be recorded as it was, and we now have to knock on Cairo's door to get some of that material.
What an incredibly valuable collection of recordings.
It is.
We have just a snippet from It's actually, I think, May 1945. And you'll recognize another voice on this.
I have observed today that people have very little to say. There are no words. And now here is Douglas Edwards, who has been visiting a pub.
Yes, Ed, we'll call this a little pub story. There's a pub in our neighborhood called the Staghead. Normally, it's probably the quietest, most sedate pub in London, or one of the most. It's not today.
As I came into range a few minutes ago, I could see the Staghead's walls were absolutely bulging. It was packed to the rafters with a happy mixture of British soldiers, civilians, American airmen, American GIs, sailors, Red Cross men and women, but mostly British.
What's intriguing, Doug?
VE Day.
That was VE Day, indeed. The words that you used were so important. If we were to cover that story today, we would have the sound of the people in the pub.
That's right. Exactly.
You had to describe that.
Yes, I think we better mention that in case a few people out there might not recognize the great voice of Edward R. Murrow, who had done, we've been working all day long, and this was late at night, I think about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, London time. But it's true, and it's because we didn't have one of the finest tools in the world, the tools of our trade. We didn't have tape recorders to take into that pub and to record the singing and the general repartee that always goes in an assemblage of British people. I love the way they handle this language, which, after all, was theirs to begin with.
But you were a journalist who really knew how to use the language, because I'm going to take you up to the days when we did have recorders, and Doug Edwards did better without them. In many ways. Listen to the words here. This is 1956. You'll recognize the story.
We made another pass over the Andrea Doria. Her three swimming pools were empty of water, empty the hard way, spilled into the ocean. No sign of life aboard. Her captain and handful of crewmen had left her shortly before. At 200 feet, you could see the pride of the Italian merchant fleet slipping slowly into the Atlantic. Down first at the bow, dying in a green foam that looked all the world like the lifeblood of the vessel.
They don't write like that anymore, Doug.
That was almost ad-lib, as I remember it. Ad-lib from, I had done that on film on the ship and then gone immediately to a telephone at Quonset Point, the naval base up in Rhode Island, and just sort of, and I did it, by the way, at 12 noon for the Wendy Warren program. It was on the air at exactly at 12 noon, as I recall it, the Andrea Doria having slipped under the ceiling of the Atlantic Ocean at 10:09. It's an interesting kind of story about that. We labored all night to get up to Quonset. The whole Northeast was covered in by fog, and we went by train and automobile, and then picked up a crew in Providence, and with the help of some police escorts, got there, and then everything came to a dead halt for about 20 minutes. We found the Tarawa in the aircraft carrier in port, and we'd hoped to use her as a helicopter base. But finally, our idea was to get out, of course, to the scene of the collision of the Andrea Doria with the Stockholm. And finally, a commander recognized my puss and said, "Can I help you, Mr. Edwards?" And I said, "I certainly hope so." And the next thing you know, we're airborne on a Grumman Albatross. Got there just as the ship began to empty the water out, made a pass around her, and we knew that she then was sinking before our eyes. To make the long story short, had we gotten there 5 minutes earlier, we'd probably made the pictures, come home, or 5 minutes later, 5-10 minutes later, we'd have missed the whole thing.
Mm. You've covered so many intriguing things, you know, and we're running out of time. This should be an hour or a day broadcast. Most intriguing story of your career?
Well, World War II has got to be number one. I think that would be standard. The Andrea Doria certainly was a graphic highlight. It required no great analytical ability on my part to put it on the air or to do it. It was just there, and it was a tremendous, sad story to cover. As I have said recently, I think one of the nicest stories was the telling of the efficacy of the Salk vaccine for polio in the mid-30s out at the University of Michigan, the telling by the one who really put it together with help elsewhere, I guess, Jonas Salk. And we told that story through the eyes of a country doctor from Weston, Connecticut, to my own family doctor. We took him along to get over the point of how important this was to the children of America, and not only the children, but the grown-ups of this country and the whole world as well, wiping out a scourge of summer.
You became a journalist because you were fascinated by news, and obviously you became a highly successful one over your career, well rewarded financially, certainly the ego gratification of being a well-known broadcaster has got to be tremendous. But what is the biggest satisfaction that you've ever gotten out of all of this that you've done? And those of us in the business can attest to the long, thankless hours. It's not an easy job, even though it seems like it.
I think it has come in a sort of a culmination of the mail that I've been receiving since I announced the retirement, Art. The word that keeps rolling back in every other letter is, we believed you. We believed you, and we could understand you, and we never thought that you slanted the news. You did it straight, and that's the way we like it, and that's the greatest compliment anybody could pay me. That is the great reward.
Are you surprised at the outpouring?
Yes, tremendously so. I shouldn't be, I suppose, if you talk into these microphones for 46 years and before the CBS cameras, every day for almost 40, well, it has been 40 years in May and since I first did a 42 years, really, a CBS television broadcast. I shouldn't be surprised because you've got to, I suppose, garner a little believability is one of my favorite words with all of that output. There has been, a great many words, and I'm glad they've been believed.
Any second thoughts about retirement?
Yes, I'm going to retire on April 1st, and I'm tempted to say it's all a big April Fool gag, and I really didn't mean it. Go down with all my recent notices to Howard Stringer, my boss, and say, hey, let's cut a new five-year deal.
Well, listen, I'm you're only 70, so I fully expect in about 5 years I'm going to totter down. Is it Sarasota?
Sarasota. We're going to dig our toes in the sand and watch them build a house for us, well, Art. You're welcome. We'll be in the book.
5 years from now, I want to come down, bring Georgine Burtis, our producer, and we're going to do another Let's Find Out and talk about Douglas Edwards, how much work he's done in the 5 years he's been retired so far.
Deal. That's okay. A deal. You'll be welcome. It'll be great to see you as always.
Doug, good luck. Congratulations. We're going to miss you. I presume we're going to hear from you from time to time.
You will indeed, and I shall miss you and all the other great friends that has been my privilege to bump gums with all these years and hands to clasp and so on. It's been a great run, and I hate to leave it, and I'm of two minds about it. But I do thank you for this opportunity to chat with you, and I've been one of your fans for years, my friend.
Well, I don't know what to say after that, Doug. Thank you, and thank you for joining us. And a special thanks to Jill Landis of the CBS Radio Network for helping us dig out all that great tape you heard tonight, and our producer, Georgine Burtis. I'm Art Athens. Usually we close with the theme, but tonight we'll close this way.
The weather today, Montana in a real state of deep freeze, about 48 degrees near Helena. Snow in Utah and Wyoming, Idaho, stormy along the Gulf of Mexico and Texas. And generally, however, here in New York and out in Chicago, something resembling springtime, 58 degrees here in New York this afternoon. It's really a pretty big country after all. Lots of weather and lots of news. Douglas Edwards saying goodnight for CBS News.
CBS News has presented Douglas Edwards with late developments in the day's news. Portions of this program were on film, part of which was supplied by Telenews Productions. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.